Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears along with you here. It is Thanksgiving Eve, Wednesday, November 24th, 2021. 18 minutes past the hour, and this really is the day that kind of kicks off the whole holiday season. We get ready for the big Thanksgiving holiday tomorrow, Thanksgiving, which leads into Friday, which I think is still called Black Friday. I don't really know. It's not got the oomph that it used to have, but Black Friday will come on Friday. Christmas trees will go up if they are not already up, and the holiday season will be in full swing. We've got a lot of housekeeping to do here this morning. We've got a big morning here on WWGH Radio. Matter of fact, a big day. I'll be on from 8 to 10 this morning, and then I will also stay on this morning with Glenn Coble from 10 until 12, so I'll be sticking around with you through noon today. Then Glenn will be on with Dr. Ron Feynman, 12 to 1, with A Progressive Life. Then we have Offbeat News and Trivia Today, a Thanksgiving edition, 4 to 5 p.m. with Nate Redman, and the Trinity Baptist Church Sunday Sermon tonight from 6:10 until 7 p.m. Now, do want to remind you that coming up tomorrow night, Thanksgiving night, we will not be on tomorrow morning, but we've got a way to kick off your holiday season. Tomorrow night at 8:10 p.m., it's the debut of A Very Golden Voice Christmas with Ted Williams, myself, and Bobby Ray, the Kazoo Man. You don't want to miss this. There is a lot of talk of holiday past, as well as Bobby Ray performing some great holiday tunes, and the debut of Ebenezer Williams, based on A Christmas Carol with Ted and myself. So that debuts tomorrow night, Thanksgiving night, so after you eat the dinner and the cranberries and all that and are stuffed, turn on the radio at 8:10, and you will get you'll get a nice way to ring in the holiday season, A Very Golden Voice Christmas. Now, throughout the show this morning, we are also going to have some special call-ins here and there, some people who we've made friends with over the years, some celebrities, some not, just dropping in to say Happy Thanksgiving, I believe, is what I've been told, so get ready for that. And we've been talking about it now for about 2 weeks, the Big Tur Pizza. The turkey stuffed pizza. No, I did it backwards. It's the pizza stuffed turkey. Bob Welsh, author of the book Three Pies Hot, and former manager of the Great Race Pizza Shop here in Marion, is in the kitchen already getting the turkey ready, so it's going to be something here momentarily. Also, do want to remind you in our housekeeping bit this morning that our big Christmas card drive kicks off this morning. We do this every year, and we're going to start it today. As you know, people who have been faithful listeners now for 8 years, here's how it goes. Send your Christmas cards to WWGH 523 South Prospect Street here in Marion, 43302. If you put a return address in the card, we will send you a card back and also read your card on the air, which has always been a lot of fun. We've done that for, I think this will be the 8th Christmas. So there you go. You can start doing that today. Send those cards to WWGH Radio, 523 South Prospect Street, Marion, Ohio, 43302. Remember to put the return address in there, or we will not know how to get that back to you. And we've also got a guest here for the first portion of the show this morning. We've talked a lot of politics this week in regard to the case with Robert Landon, and we've just got an update yesterday of how things are going on in the city with the mayor, and a big thing happened this week, so we did not want to not talk about it. The ARPA bill was passed on Monday night at City Council, so we want to get into all of that. Hey, Bob, before I want you to give us an update on this turkey before we get into this. Bob Welsh is here. He's slaving away in the kitchen already on this Thanksgiving Eve morning. So now, I think I've been misquoting this all week. Is it turkey-filled pizza?
It is a turkey-filled pizza, yes. I had to make sure we said that
okay,
properly.
Okay, turkey-filled pizza. And one of our listeners coined it the Tur Pizza.
That's good enough for me.
Good enough for you. Now, so is the turkey part, and I saw the pizza this morning.
Yeah, I made sure I showed it to Scott so we had evidence, or at least a witness, that it was a pizza.
Evidence that this is happening.
And we have a picture.
We do have, oh, good, pictures, and we'll put those up on the internet later on today. Now, this was my concern. What is going on the pizza that's going in the turkey?
And I've listened to you for the last week or so, and
I'm worried.
And I've heard everything that you don't like, which is a lengthy list.
Well, no. I like the stuff. I don't like green.
No green peppers.
No green peppers. No olives.
No olives.
Now that's what I don't like. But I do like other stuff. I just thought in a turkey, I might not like it in a turkey. Yeah. That was all my concern was.
It was basically two words I know you don't like too much: a sausage onion pizza with pepperoni.
Okay.
And with a white sauce rather than a tomato sauce, because I don't think tomato and turkey go together that well. So I baked up the pizza yesterday and brought it in this morning and chopped it up and stuffed it into turkey and with other little spices and everything as well. Herbs and sauces and stuff, and it's in the oven baking right now.
So now, how long does it take to bake a turkey here? I mean, this is quite a lengthy process.
And I hunted high and low for the smallest turkey I could find in order to keep the baking time down. And it's an 11.5-pound turkey, stuffed. It'll take approximately 3 hours to cook.
Oh, so about 11 o'clock this morning.
About 11 o'clock.
So Glenn will be here to eat this thing.
He will be here, and hopefully he'll be here.
Glenn will be here.
Maybe he's changing directions right now. But then you have to let it set a little bit there. But maybe 11:30-ish, 11:15, you can start cutting into it.
Well, this will be good. So everybody will have to stay tuned all morning, right up until that last minute when we partake in this turkey...
Terpizza.
It's easier to say that than explain what it is. But is the pizza supposed to be used as a stuffing? Is that the idea?
Well, pizza is a universal food that can be used for anything. And
we'll find that out this morning. We'll figure that out about 11:30. Jury's out right now.
But it has a lot of the basic elements of your typical dressing or stuffing. You know, the breadcrumbs. I maybe used a few herbs and spices that are not normally on a pizza for this particular one. Most of your, you know, sausage is a popular stuffing item with little onions. I left out the green peppers. I don't like those in a stuffing either. I usually like some nuts in my... I'd left out the nuts. I didn't know about any allergies or anything, so I wanted to stay away from
that. We don't need the nut allergy, sure.
But walnuts is typically a good item in a stuffing as well. Likewise, I left... You don't normally see oysters on a pizza, so I left those off as well.
Well, it's going to be interesting. We're all excited for this. The turpizza, the turkey-filled pizza, which, hey, this will be interesting as the morning progresses here. Now, are you supposed to eat the stuffing, though? That's the question.
Definitely.
Okay,
yes.
So you eat the pizza... stuffing.
Yes.
But does it do anything to the turkey? Do we know?
It should impart some flavors. It's more that the turkey in its cooking will impart more flavors to the stuffing, but it should be mutual. And I don't know how much you want to get into the details here, but I put some of the pepperoni up under the skin, between the skin and the bird itself, so that similar to what people might do with bacon, it'll help impart the pepperoni flavor to the turkey.
Well, we're going to get back to Bob here as the morning progresses, and we've also got some fun Thanksgiving trivia that we're going to do, and we have some copies of his book, actually, I believe the gold edition of this book, Three Pies Hot. What a great holiday gift that would be. You could get your holiday shopping done here this morning. We'll give away a couple copies of those as the morning goes on with some Thanksgiving family feud. So Bob's going to be with us. We're going to check in with Kai here, and the phone calls will come as they come this morning from the listening audience. Now, Kai... tell us what in the world ARPA means, and why is this a big deal that it passed Monday?
So ARPA stands for American Rescue Plan Act, and it's federal dollars that the city received, and cities all across America received, along with counties as well, and it can be used for specific things. We ended up getting $1.8 million, and we'll get another $1.8 million next year. I put together a bill That's about $950,000. We can call it a million. And what it does is it addresses tearing down some of our blighted homes. It addresses flooding because we're going to clean out one of the ditches in Marion. It addresses speeding. It gives our first responders resources. And then it also gives our kids something to do because we're going to invest in Founders Park, and we're going to invest in putting quality parks into our into Lincoln Park. And then in addition, like I said, we're making our first responders safer with things like PLIME events, which help. If you don't know, it's easy to just think of them as they help make sure that our firefighters aren't breathing in anything they're not supposed to be. And so I thought it was important to put forward something and you know, as a legislator, actually legislate that, you know, the whole community could get behind, hopefully, and that we could you know, come together and support, hopefully, in a bipartisan way.
So what, for example, will happen with Founders Park?
So there's a couple different things that want to happen with Founders. One of the things that they talk about doing is putting in a band shell and just making it so that there's just more things to do there while people are downtown, whether that's live music, whether that's, you know, when we do the, there's all kinds of downtown events, but just making sure that people, you know, there's just more to do. And that's kind of the same idea with Lincoln Park, with the basketball courts. Marion has a few different basketball courts, but, you know, a lot of time they're not in the best condition. A lot of times they're just plain shaped weird. I'm trying to, you know, make sure that that you know, whoever wants to play basketball or the kids of Marion have, you know, the same quality courts that you could find in Upper Sandusky, where, you know, their parks department has a much smaller budget. I think that it's, you know, important to make sure that people have things to do.
So there could be live shows down in Founders Park and not get rained out with a band shell.
Well, you know, that's the idea behind it. At the end of the day, it'll come down to cost, but you have to have the money to be able to do that. And to be clear, you know, that makes up a small portion of the ARPA bill. A majority of the ARPA bill is going towards addressing flooding, addressing tearing down some of these blighted homes, and helping our first responders.
Now, yesterday when the mayor was on, one of the things he was seemingly, he said he could live with them, but was not particularly thrilled with some things in this ARPA bill, and one was the speed bumps.
Mm-hmm. So there's a difference between speed bumps, speed humps, and speed tables. These are movable ones, so I guess if you don't want them, you don't have to have them. But one of the things that we started in Fair Park was the Fair Park Neighborhood Association. And we had about, let's say, 35 to 40 people show up to the first meeting. We had them fill out a form that said, hey, what's your biggest issues? And the number one issue overwhelmingly, and by overwhelmingly I mean like 90%, was speeding. And, you know, we can try to make sure that we have, you know, as many officers on the street as possible dealing with this. But I think that to address speeding, we need to understand two things. For one, there's nothing we can do really with any subject to completely end an issue, but we can mitigate it. And number two, there's never one answer. We need to look at it from, you know, investing in things like speed humps, making sure that, you know, there's enough officers on the streets. You know, it's a multitude of things. And so I understand why there's concern, because it's a new concept, but again, this is like a pilot project that if it goes really well, we can reinvest in it again next year with more ARPA dollars, and if not, you know, we'll keep it in the residential areas of the streets that get the most speed complaints. I mean, at the end of the day, it'll be complaint-driven, so, you know, you're not just going to wake up one day and be like, well, you know, there's no speeding on my street. How the heck did these things get here?
Now, as far, when you say movable, how would you move them?
So, essentially, Akron has a pretty good program on how this works. They get drilled into the ground in the same few locations. And the idea is, realistically, you're probably going to get moved around to the same 10 streets throughout the city that have the worst speeding, because you're keeping them in areas where, you know, the speed limit's 25. You're keeping them in residential areas. And so they're always going to be in the same areas on that specific street, and then they just get drilled in and taken out. It also helps because you don't really need speed humps in the dead of winter when the road is iced over 3-4 days a week. And so that way we can really focus on, you know, the warmer months where speeding does pick up. And that way, you know, as long as we keep in good communication with our first responders, I think that this is kind of a nice moderate answer.
Now, this did not pass unanimously. 5-3 is my understanding. Who did you have support from, and who did not support this?
So, I supported out of the first ward. Ayers Ratliff supported out of the second ward. Jason Schauber supported out of the third ward. Josh Feliciano voted against it. Karen Fosna voted against it. Kathy Swanger voted for it. Mike Neff voted against it. Josh Daniels abstained. And then Mike Thomas voted for it.
Now, what's very interesting about the makeup of that particular vote, city council will change in about, a month and a half at this point. First of the year.
Yes.
Now, with what you just laid out, Kathy Swanger will no longer be there. She was a yes vote. Josh Daniels, who abstained, will no longer be there. There will be somebody voting in his position, and I assume they will vote on things like this. Fosna will stay. She voted against it. Feliciano will stay. He voted against it. Neff will stay. He voted against it. To me, this sounds pretty much like a party line vote, except for Jason Schauber, who has been the known Republican to cross lines. So it would sound, and I don't want to be pessimistic about this, but if that was the makeup of what happened on Monday night, come January, this might not have passed.
You know, and that might be true, but at the end of the day, I think I said every single meeting, if you have something you want to bring to the table, call me, we'll work something out. You know, to a degree that happened, and you know, it didn't convert any votes, but I still wanted to have any meaningful discussion that we could about, you know, what can we add to this, what can we, you know, how can we shape this to make this a bill that helps as many people as possible. And you know, at the end of the day, once you have, I think we had almost twice as many meetings of discussion about this as a typical bill would have, and so by the sixth time we're discussing it, I think to me it turns into, well, if you don't have a specific thing that you want to put forward, but you're just against it, then, you know, vote no for it at the end of the day. But just try to stay out of the way of progress if you can.
But see, that's the confusing thing, I think, to a lot of people listening. If you don't have a better plan and it's been talked out, or you don't have any plan at all, what is the reason to vote against it at this point and not have discussion about what I want, why I think this is bad? Do you have any idea why people like Mrs. Fosna or Mr. Neff or Mr. Feliciano said no? Because it's right down party lines, with the exception of Jason Schauber.
Yeah, I think right now, the council's makeup, you could kind of have a vote go either way. It's not really tilted one way or the other so heavily that, you know, it's a shoo-in. And I think to some council members, you know, they don't want to put their neck out there. Like I said, you know, this vote wasn't the closest, but it could have been, I would have liked it if there's more votes for it, but I think some council members just don't want to have to stick their neck out there. They want the safe bet. I felt like some of these issues were very time sensitive, very time pertinent, and it was important to, you know, try to pass it, and let's hear why people don't support it one way or the other. And I don't think that there was ever any good opposition towards it one way or the other. And I think that, you know, if every resident of the city of Marion could have sat there in that meeting, most of them would have supported it as well.
Yesterday, talking to the mayor, it seemed as if, and I don't think he said this outright, that he was going to try to work with everybody to the best of his ability come January, but that there has been a party division here in Marion on city council all of a sudden that did not exist in years past. That things used to get passed, and you really didn't know who was going to vote for it or who was going to vote against it, and you certainly didn't know by the Republican or Democratic party affiliation they had. Now, you can almost look. I had no idea what the makeup of it was this morning, but I had a pretty good idea who the three were who voted against it. It shouldn't be that way.
Yeah, and I think I would encourage people to go back and listen to the meetings where we're discussing the ARPA bill. A lot of the opposition is just, I mean, from the very beginning, it's just silly opposition to where, like, you can tell that they don't believe what they're saying. They're just trying to put
some pushback. Give me an example.
So, the fourth ward city councilman said one of the reasons why he couldn't support it was he was not sure of, like, the specific location in Lincoln Park. And then when I provided the specific location, he just then moved on to a completely different topic. So, like, for a couple weeks he said, well, you know, it's not that it's in Lincoln. It's I don't know specifically where it is in Lincoln. And it's like, so you're determining part of a $950,000 bill is whether or not you're on the east side of Lincoln, the north side of Lincoln. That's not what's actually holding you up. So I think at the very first meeting I said, look, if you don't want to vote for the bill, if there's nothing in the world that could change to make you vote for this bill, then just say that.
So has the Republican Party, when you say stick your neck out, and I want people to understand this, has the Republican Party in Marion, at least in accordance to city council, Is somebody telling them not to vote? Because when you say they don't want to stick their neck out, who's going to chop it off?
Well, I don't think it's that as much as no one wants to put... People don't want to put things forward if they think that it's not a guarantee to pass. Which, you know, sometimes is politically the smart thing to do one way or the other. I'm trying to put politics, you know, to the wayside and actually pass some stuff that gets that helps out the voters in Marion and the constituents in Marion. We had a special meeting about, you know, issues with flooding. We've had, you know, meetings about, like, oh, let's tear down these houses, and we finally get a check for $1.8 million, and then all of a sudden I'm the only one that wants to put anything forward. And to be fair, I to a degree this is more than just my bill, because, like, I worked with Kathy Swanger, I worked with Jason Schauber, Ayers Ratliff, you know, to put something together. They came to me with ideas for what they wanted to see on this. But at the end of the day, you know, we have to legislate. Like, this can't be some political thing where we're all just, you know, saying the things that we see on the evening news, whether that you're watching something that's left-leaning or right-leaning. You know, you're a legislator. It's your job to legislate.
Do you foresee problems coming in January with a 6-3 split on city council, Republican?
I don't know. I mean, I'll work with anyone. My job is to...
You know, but we look at Monday night's bill and...
Yeah, you know, and I'll continue to try to put things forward that I think are the best ways to spend this ARPA money. And if it passes, it passes. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But I'm not going to treat anyone differently because they have an R next to their name. I think that, you know, sometimes we get lost, by we, I like to think that I don't mean me, in the immaturities of politics, to where if I just ride a political wave one way or the other, then I don't have to work with anyone one way, or I don't have to, you know, I don't have to participate one way or the other, because I can just take advantage of the political climate.
I want to talk, Monday night also, I believe $14,000 was approved to help the new auditor, who I think will take office next week, Miranda McGinnis, mm-hmm. Is that right?
That's correct.
Yeah, she will take office next week. $14,000 to help her try to get things in order with the computer system is how it was explained to me. Now, at one point you said you would not spend any taxpayer money to help fix the situation that former auditor Robert Landon got us into. What was your feeling on this $14,000 on top of the nearly $160,000 that's already been paid in fines and penalties to the IRS?
So right now, I think one of the common misconceptions is we are still trying to recoup some of that money that we've been fined towards. And, you know, going after a bond is definitely, you know, an option that I'd like us to see go forward. But in the meantime, you know, training is a typical thing that we spend money on, regardless when a new auditor steps in. The only difference is, you know, now it's in the middle of a term, essentially, whereas if this was just, like, the beginning of 2023 or at the beginning of 2019, these are expenses that we would face one way or the other. The only difference, the only reason why you need that additional expenditure is because the former auditor quit. So I think that, you know, that's not really... It's an additional expense, but it's not an additional expense. And at the same time, I don't want to set anyone up to fail. And if this is required so that we don't have future fines, or we don't have fines later down the road, and so she can do the job to the best of her ability, then I fully support it. I don't want anyone to be set up to fail, and I want people to have the tools and the necessary abilities to be able to do the job to the best of their ability.
This bond issue, now it's my understanding that the city auditor is bonded for $100,000, and this is to recoup any mistake or any problem that might happen in regard to their term. Now, is this something, because this has been confusion on, depending on who you talk to, is that something city council votes on to go after the bond money? Is it something that just happens, the bond company decides that they need to pay this money? How does that process happen?
I believe that we already voted to say, you know, when it becomes necessary, we do authorize, you know, whoever to pursue the bond. But right now, we're just trying to, you know, do as much as we can to mitigate the damages, so that way, when we do have to speak to the bond agency, we can say, look, you know, we did everything we could. We tried, I mean, we turned over every rock to try to get this bill as low as possible. Now we have to go after the bond.
Well, the other big story of the last 7 days, of course, was dealing with Robert Landon, that no criminal charges were brought against him in regard to several issues that were turned over to a special prosecutor, Matt Kroll from Crawford County. When you heard that, what'd you think?
You know, I think that it's important that people be held accountable for their actions, and I think that in Ohio, right now especially, because we're ranked one of the most corrupt states in terms of public government in the nation, you like to see elected officials get held accountable when they're doing things like this. But at the end of the day, you know, he's an attorney, I'm not, and so, you know, there could have been facts that I was unaware of, or, you know, maybe the elements weren't there to meet the specific charge one way or the other. And so I do kind of sympathize with the idea that, you know, now, you know, let's just hopefully put this to bed and have it be done with. But, you know, at the same time, I don't like the idea that just because you're an elected official or just because, you know, you're so-and-so that you get different treatment one way or the other, or just because, you know, maybe I think one of his arguments were, you know, let's put this to bed. I think that if you're just average Joe, you know, that's not really an excuse. I can't imagine a defendant on the stand saying, you know, we've been talking about this for a while, let's just put it to bed.
Well,
and then, the prosecutor being like, yeah, you're right, let's just drop the charges.
Well, it's interesting because Ray Grogan, a Republican here in Marion, referred this to Matt Kroll, a Republican in Crawford County, and one, I believe it was even addressed in the report by Matt Kroll as to why this is not a bias, why there's no bias involved in this decision on his part, being a Republican. Mr. Grogan seemed to go along with that when he was on the show Monday. The mayor, not so much yesterday. I asked him if this was a Democrat, would we have the same outcome? And he said pretty much he did not believe that would be the case. Do you believe politics was at play in this decision?
You know, you can never know for sure one way or the other, but at the same time, it certainly smells like it, and it kind of feels, I feel the same way. It draws the same, you know, feeling from me as when, you know, as when Warner was walking around free, as when, you know, when that whole case was going on. I remember there was a lot of talk of, you know, if this wasn't a judge, this wouldn't be happening one way or the other, and it kind of feels the same way. But it's one of those things where, you know, you can never distinctly say, yes, 100%, this was politics. I mean, that's what makes issues like this so difficult, is because very rarely is there that smoking gun.
Well, it's interesting because the final paragraph, the summation of this whole thing with Matt Kroll, there's a line in there that's strange. No criminal charges should be charged out of this never-ending saga between Marion City officials. Did you feel there was a saga going on between the Marion City officials?
You know, it went on for a long time. And one of the points that I made when we were passing the ARPA bill is, you know, we can't have the world stop turning over this issue. You know, I think that to a degree there'll still be, you know, those pushes on social media by different people on, you know, defending actions from a year ago, year and a half ago. At the end of the day, I think that, you know, it's time to move on and from one aspect, but at the same time, I think that, you know, we can't let people twist the story on what actually happened.
Interestingly enough, we learned from Prosecutor Grogan on Monday that this report will be turned over to Law Director Mark Russell, and that he can bring misdemeanor charges if he would like. Now, Mark is a Democrat, and it seems as if you're saying that maybe this part of it was politically motivated. Do you think there should be charges? I mean, it's the same crimes, same issues.
You know, again, I'm not an attorney. I haven't really looked at the elements for the charge, but I think that if Mark Russell does look at it and say, all right, here's what happened, you know, here's the elements for it, then I think that there should be, and I think that applies to Republicans, Democrats across the board. I really don't think that there should be any consideration. I know that there frequently is of someone's political leanings one way or the other, but I think that if someone violates the law, they should be prosecuted for it, especially, you know, in the context that we saw there. I think that we saw, to a great degree, we saw, you know, consistent behavior out of a specific individual because they kept, you know, they kept kind of finding some technicality, squeaking by something. And so I think it emboldens people in a way to say, well, you know, I'm an elected official, so I'm untouchable, or and things like that. So I think that it's important that people just get held accountable for their actions. I think that we kind of go down a weird... we take a weird turn when we just automatically assume that, like, well, you know, maybe it's a maybe thing. Well, it's not a maybe thing. If you broke the law, you should be prosecuted, and that's really the end of it.
Well, the end of it for Robert Landon, I think at this point, was I don't believe he talked to the Star, he did not talk to us, but he did release a statement on social media with the newspaper article that basically said there were going to be no criminal charges, and his response was fairly short. It said, exonerated again from the endless attacks by the mayor, Democrats on city council, and the law director. I must live rent-free in their heads because they are obsessed with me, and I have tried everything... They are obsessed with me and have tried everything they can do to destroy me, yet I'm still standing.
Typically elected officials that are still standing don't resign three times.
But I mean, that's a heavy statement.
And I think that at the same time, you know, I think to a certain degree, it's a... I think he's just going to keep putting out media statements as long as people run with it. You know, people don't really... It doesn't make news what Kelly Carr posted. She was the former auditor before him. I think that... And the same for Bob Cramer and whoever was before him. So I think that to a certain degree, I think it's really just, you know... At this point, it's just this, like, the sad diary writings of a shamed politician.
I think the reason this still makes news is because the report just came back. And to my knowledge, Bob Cramer or Kelly Carr... There were no criminal charges pending with either of them. I don't know that they were fined in excess of $160,000, a bond issue still hanging in the balance, misdemeanor charges possibly still hanging in the balance. And I think that's why things that Robert Landon says still make news.
Yeah, and I get that to a degree. You're right, Kelly Carr never had any of the charges or any of the trouble that we were dealing with lately. I guess just at the same time, I'll be glad when this is all done, when we can move forward with city business. Like I said, this really pertained to me because I was trying to pass an ARPA bill. The ARPA bill's passed now. So I think the best thing is you know, we stick to electing people into positions that they're qualified for, and, you know, we focus on doing things that are beneficial to the voters and the constituents of Marion, like the ARPA bill, like community cleanups, you know, like small business, like the small business day stuff that I've been doing. I think that, you know, sometimes it makes for a good headline what former elected officials have to say one way or the other, but it's not really beneficial. It's more of just, you know, giving somebody their 15 minutes of fame or giving somebody a little ego boost.
Well, I think here's the issue with the whole thing, because we talked about it starting with the ARPA bill and other things that are going on in city council and have been for a long time now, that it is a party line vote. And the line about this in this statement from Robert Landon is really not about exonerated or yet here I stand. It's very clear that he feels the endless attacks were from the mayor, a Democrat, and then by party here, Democrats on city council, and the law director, who is a Democrat. I must live rent-free in their heads because they're obsessed with me and have tried everything they can do to destroy me. This is Democrat versus Republican. This is those darn Democrats are out to get me. They have been from the beginning. And every statement that Robert Landon has ever released pretty much reads that way, that I'm doing my job, I've done nothing wrong, I've committed no criminal crimes, yet it's those Democrats, if they would just shut up, I would be okay.
Yeah, and I can't define a good old boys club better than that. You know, if people would just stop looking at what I'm doing, then no one would ever say I did anything wrong. Is basically the opinion on that. You know, we've had some Republican support from like Jason Schopper on what we've done with this one way or the other. But at the same time, I don't think I've put out a single social media post about this one way or the other. Whereas, and I don't think any of the Dems or Jason Schopper has or the Independents. Whereas, I mean, like. I think some of him and some of his supporters have multiple press releases, multiple different Facebook pages, almost just dedicated to this. So I think that if there's someone that's kind of given this a little too much time, it's not us. We just want to run the city the correct way.
With no criminal charges, with statements like this, this is a guy who never lost an election. He, as Ray Grogan said on Monday, he worked his tail off to defeat a 20-year incumbent in your ward. He was the councilman in your ward prior to you winning that ward. He knocked off Ralph Cumston. Then a sitting, by all accounts, a city auditor who was doing her job, Kelly Carr, he knocked her off by a pretty large amount. To say that we're never going to see Robert Landon run for office again, I think, is not believable. If you look into the statements, if you look into his career, if you look into the fact that right now he's got nothing legally against him and can basically say, they tried on election day to charge me, nothing came of that. They tried when I was auditor to charge me, nothing came of that. And I have never lost an election.
Yeah, you know, I think that there's a difference between a good politician and a good elected official. You know, people can be good at campaigning, but that doesn't make you a good auditor. You can be, or any position. You know, the skills that are required to campaign really don't match up with the skills that are required to be a good auditor. And that's true of anyone. I mean, when you're knocking on doors, you're not really going over, you know, complex accounting measures with your typical voter one way or the other. And then I think, in addition, you don't really get that, you know, maybe if he wants to run, nothing's stopping him one way or the other. I would just hope that, you know, we're probably going to hit $200,000 in fines caused by this. So, you know, at what point is that enough? At what point does a voter say, you know, maybe you like the guy, maybe you don't, but if there's only so much money that the taxpayer can spend, or there's only so much, you know, trouble that can be caused before you say, you know, I don't think I'm going to do that again, one way or the other.
What somebody I think we'll have to look at some point in this particular situation is how we got to where we got. How did we get to a situation like this with a Republican auditor that led to more Republicans being elected to city council than in many, many years? And I think the big question in this whole thing is we now do have party line votes. Now, will that continue in January? I don't know. There'll be a few new council people. We'll see what happens. But did he sow division? Because the thing about people like Mr. Feliciano and Mrs. Fosnaugh and Mr. Neff, Republicans on city council, Mr. Schauber, I don't see press releases from them. Now, they might vote down party lines in some cases, Jason Schauber less than the rest, but I don't see them making statements to that effect. One thing Robert Landon has done and continued to do, it's the Republicans against the Democrats. The Democrats are evil. They're out to get me. I'm living rent-free in their minds. Did he create, to a degree, the system that we have on city council now, that there now is a division in local government?
Well, I think that to a certain degree, well, to a large degree, it's national politics that's you know, created this, and I think that it's just taking advantage of a mistrust that both groups have of each other. But that being said, I think that it's also important to keep in mind that, you know, while I will disagree with some council members over maybe a discussion on an ARPA bill or something like that, it's never really, you know, outside of the council chambers, it's never really divisive one way or the other. You know, sometimes you just have a disagreement and that's just, you know, the politics of it. But it kind of starts and stops at the discussion for that specific bill. This kind of brought it outside of the chambers. This kind of blew it up into a more personal issue. I think to a certain degree we have to wait and see with the Republicans that were newly elected. You know, there's things that I agree with some of them on. I think that, you know, at our Meet the Candidates night, Brett Cornelius and I both agreed about potentially pursuing a charter city. So, I mean, I try to look for any common ground I can find at the end of the day, and I'm not over here, you know, swinging for the fences for anyone that's not the same political party as me. I just think it's important that we hold our elected officials accountable. I don't really care what letter you have next to your name.
When will we start to see things in regard to the ARPA bill that was passed?
I think you're probably looking towards next spring, maybe the end of next spring. The ditch cleaning could come sooner than that, because I think that's seasonally important that we do it during colder months. But for a lot of the stuff, you're looking towards the spring, one way or the other. But also things like the Plime events, things like the extra man hours in there for police officers, those can be used almost immediately. They could be, as soon as January. But for a lot of things like the basketball courts and things like that, you're probably looking at the spring.
Is this a big win in your opinion?
I think it's a huge one. I mean, at the end of the day, I think, I grew up in a majority in Marion, Ohio, the Midwest, nice, and everyone's got their, everyone's very, very humble. But I can't think of a time when anyone, especially in their first term, has passed something like this. That's going to do so much, that's as big as it is, for the residents of Marion. The first ward, some of it does, is more of a first ward thing, but this also helps out, just generally across the board, citizens of Marion. And when you combine that with, community cleanups, the small business day, and all the other things that we've been able to do, I think that this really caps off a really successful first term. And this is something that, you can point to for a long time to say, look, a lot of people talk about issues. A lot of people say we need to do something about this. But when the chips are on the table, when we had a check for $1.8 million, who actually put something forward? Who fought for it? Who, in the face of opposition, who, was willing to go to bat for the people getting affected by flooding, for the people that, for the firefighters, for the police officers? I think that that's more telling than any, any posturing or grandstanding that we get from any other elected officials.
And this will be for the whole city, not just the first ward.
Yeah, so like the ditch cleaning that you'll see is primarily runs through the Fair Park area. But like I said, like speed humps, those can be placed anywhere where you could probably put it on a 35. I would advise against it, but in any residential area. Plime events for the firefighters, they help everyone in the city of Marion, the police officer stuff as well. The basketball courts aren't even going in the first ward. And so a lot of it, and the demolitions are probably going to be, you'll see some houses torn down in the first, but what I said from the very beginning is let's tear down the houses that need it the most. I don't want to play politics with this. Some people are losing, there's some really bad houses that need to come down. Let's tear down the worst of the worst. I don't care if they're in the first ward, or I don't care if they're in the sixth ward. Let's just tear them down.
Well, Kai, thank you for coming in this morning here on this Thanksgiving Eve. We certainly appreciate it. Congratulations on the ARPA bill, and we'll see some changes coming up here in the city in the very near future.
Thanks for having me.
All right, we're going to take a 10-minute break. Back with more. Don't go away on this Thanksgiving Eve.
Two Irishmen and a Hebrew, one went out for recreation, and they took enough provisions along to spend a week's vacation. But they got lost out in the woods the night